Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, preparing you for the 79th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor with the memories of two men who continue to do everything they can to keep that history alive. Mickey Gannich is 101 years old now, but if you go to hometownheroesradio.com, you'll see a picture of him when he had just turned 22. Those 22-year-old eyes witnessed some unbelievable things on December 7th, 1941. One of the most jarring images from that day of infamy was the explosion aboard the destroyer USS Shaw. Mickey was quite close to the Shaw aboard the battleship USS Pennsylvania.
Pieces of it there, when it exploded, fell on us. We were that close to it.
So you saw that happen in real time?
Well, I saw the result. I didn't happen to be looking in that particular direction because I'm looking around to see what else I can report there. So I didn't see it, but we saw pieces of it there that we recognized as pieces of the USS Shaw. That was quite an explosion.
When that second wave of the attack was done, was there concern that we don't know if it's over? What happens next?
Well, we figured there's going to be an invasion. Mm-hmm. Getting ready. In fact, that night, all people were instructed to go to the Army draw, get rifles and ammunition and canteens and stuff to get ready to go ashore to help the Army repel the invasion because they figured it could be invaded.
How'd you feel about that?
Well, the Navy, when we're trained, we're not trained so much with rifles, all like the Marines in the Army there. So a lot of us there would be a detriment there because we wouldn't be that capable of handling rifles and stuff like the Marines in the Army would there. So some of them were a little bit leery and some of them never even had a gun in her hands or up close, and so everybody's a little bit leery about what we do, what we can do with this there. But we were ready because we didn't know what to expect.
Well, sure. So that makes me curious about what the days and weeks that followed were like. What kinds of things were you doing? What were you hearing?
Well, just trying to fix it up the ship there and wondering whether there's going to be anything more. Waiting for news of what was happening there, and we did find out there that blocks along there, see, we were attacked there, so the next morning Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Congress declare war on Japan.
How much did it weigh on you that 2,400 Americans had lost their lives, and all these ships and planes and so many things were destroyed?
Well, a lot of us are just thinking about get revenge, get back, get do for someone to do that to us there, that we want to get even, that does didn't do our part, do what we can to get back at them and get back there. You can't get back the lives of the people that died there, but we could try to protect the others that are still with us.
And there were men from your ship who were killed that day?
We had lost 23 men injured. I'm not sure how many of them. You know, all those, some of them were injured, a lot of them died there. But that particular day and that particular 2 hours, less than 2 hours, we lost 23 men plus the injured.
And, of course, the Arizona lost 1,177 and the Oklahoma lost 429.
Yeah.
And you would find out later that one of those men aboard the Arizona was an old high school rival of yours?
Yes. I played football against him there. He went to different school, and he's one of them and still listed. He's on the list of the people who died on the Arizona. Howard Royer, R-O-Y-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
I lived about 150 yards down the street from me back in a farm in Ohio.
So you had played against him in high school, and you probably would have been playing against him the afternoon of December 7th.
Yes. Of course, we would have won the game anyhow. There's no doubt about it. We would have won. We had the best team. Because I may be prejudiced a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. I'm just curious, with all the times you've gone back to Pearl, and when you go to the USS Arizona Memorial, and you see all those names where your old rival Royer is up there.
Yeah.
What do you think about? What goes through your mind when you examine that loss of life and know how close you were to it?
Well, close to. See, when they assigned me to the ship, they could have assigned me to Arizona. So I think it's my fortune there. Luck was with me, or God was with me there, that I could be there instead. They're over here. And so I figured there that God had other plans for me. That's why I think he had other plans for me there to teach the kids, give them a little history lesson there, tell them a story of what really, really happened there. And I'm doing it for them, really, because they can't do it. They're not here to do it, but I can. I'll do it while I can, and I plan on doing it for years to come, too.
Mickey Ganich has averaged about 30 to 35 speaking engagements a year, educating younger generations about what happened on December 7th, 1941, and the years that followed. COVID-19 brought that schedule to a halt this year, but I hope you'll check out that PBS special, A Virtual Town Hall, with Mickey and his fellow Pearl Harbor survivor, Stu Headley, who Mickey jokingly calls a young man because Stu is only 99. Stu's agenda on the 79th anniversary of the attack includes a trip to the USS Midway Museum in San Diego to highlight a ceremony honoring the more than 2,400 who perished on Oahu on that day of infamy, a day Stu survived aboard the battleship USS West Virginia.
I've heard many people say Pearl Harbor was a defeat. I don't agree with them. My opinion is it was an eye-opener, because the minute Nimitz took command, he followed Admiral Yamamoto's procedure. He built the battle fleet around the aircraft carrier.
Big change in strategy.
Yes. I never had a hatred, any animosity toward the Japanese. And I'll tell you why. I lived for a whole year out in Kamaki, and we had a Japanese maid, a Japanese gardener, husband and wife, and a darling little boy. And I loved them. I looked at it this way when I was manning my battle station. You know, they're doing what they're told to do, just as I'm told. Because when I went to get my hat put on my head, I thought I was going to be with a fire and fighting away fire and rescue party. And when I reached for my hat, I got kicked right in the seat of the pants by a first-class bosun mate, Hicks. Get to your battle station on the double. This is the real thing. I grabbed my hat, ran on top sight. Planes are diving from every direction. And similar to this, a gun sets up off the deck. Mm-hmm. And it's all open underneath. I saw this pilot, Lieutenant White, shooting with his .45. Well, I dove under there with him. Now, I'm a seaman first class. He's a lieutenant commander, so I'm not going to question. But I'm thinking. And he says, son, where's your battle station? And I put it up to gun 3. He says, get up there as fast as you can. As I was going up the ladder to get in the turret, here come a Japanese torpedo plane down the port side. I could see the pilot, the radioman, and the co-pilot laughing like everything. I got inside the turret, and Krausen was already in the trainer seat. Nobody was up on the gun deck, no shellman or rammers or anybody. So I went down to my battle station. When I go out to the schools, I put on a little demonstration. I point out how the Lord protected me. When I was 9 years old, I used to like to sit in the chair and lean back on the back two legs. My dad only spoke twice. Third time he acted. And you, yes, sir, and no, sir, in our house. Mm-hmm. So I was in the kitchen, and I'm leaning back on the back two legs. My dad walked in. Stuart, they made four legs and a chair to sit on the floor. Yes, sir. But how quick a 9-year-old forgets. So next time I'm leaning back, my dad says, Stuart, I'll not tell you again. Yes, sir. In this ear and out that ear. So the next time I'm leaning back, my dad walked in the kitchen, kicked the bag leg out from underneath me. I cracked my head on the floor. I said, there's got to be a better way. Now you see my legs back up under. That's 9 years old, a habit that I learned. I'm now 20 years old. And I'm in my battle station. Normally, my feet would be on a platform. I would be bent over cranking in the dials for the elevation that they want that gun raised.
And this is a big 16-inch gun.
16-inch cannon.
How big are the projectiles in that?
It stands 5'2". It's 16 inches in diameter. They weigh 2,700 pounds. I called it a Volkswagen going out the barrel. And it takes 5 100-pound bags of black powder to hurl that shell from San Diego to Oceanside.
Uh-huh.
That is, if I've got that gun elevated to maximum height, that shell will fly 30 miles.
I just wanted people to have a sense of this isn't a little anti-aircraft gun. This the biggest you got.
So now I'm in my battle position, but we're not going to fire these 16-inch guns in Pearl. We'll blow Pearl Harbor off the map.
Yeah.
And so consequently, my feet were back up underneath me. I'm on a high stool. No back. JA phones on. And we could hear the machine gun bullets hitting the turret. We felt the thud of a torpedo. And Krause says, "Stu, let's see what's going on." We took the sight cap off our periscope and bam, there went the Arizona. And I estimated there were about 32 bodies that flew through the atmosphere.
So I want people to understand what you're saying here, because very few people actually saw the Arizona
explode.
They saw the aftermath. They saw the smoke, or they heard it and they turned.
We saw it.
When you looked into this viewfinder right before the bomb hit.
And see, I immediately thought that a bomb went down this stack because it looked like the ship broke in half. When I met this fellow here, I found out the truth. Jack McCarran was one that was blown off the ship into the burning oil. But he later informed me that he had been informed that an armor-piercing shell went through the starboard side of the forecastle right into number one handling room. There's 1,000 bags of black powder in each one of the handling rooms. That exploded. That set off turret two. That's what broke the ship in half.
But you're a 20-year-old kid.
I'm a 20-year-old brat growing up overnight.
And you're looking at a ship just like yours, another battleship.
Yep.
Blowing up and bodies flying through the air.
Yep.
How do you react to that?
Startled, surprised, but waiting for the next scenario.
Sure.
Because the next scenario was an armor-piercing shell dropped from a high-level bomber came through our turret. And what he'd done, he took 15-inch armor-piercing shells. Mm-hmm. They welded fins on them so that they would spiral. Well, over top of our left gun is a catapult, and I called it a slingshot. And we had two airplanes on that catapult that morning. One was a scout observation plane, an SOU-2, and the other was the Kingfish, the Admiral's plane. Well, the scout observation is a biplane.
Yeah.
The top wing is the gas tank. The Admiral's plane is a single wing. And when that shell hit, hit the top wing of the scout plane, the gasoline exploded, burnt the plane to a crisp, split that catapult in half, and came down through 5 inches of steel right into the left gun. And the reason I'm here today is because that shell did not explode. And here's a picture of it taken on December the 9th. That's the inside of the turret.
And I'll put this picture up at hometownheroesradio.com. And I think some people who've been paying close attention are doing the math or following your drift on this. But go ahead and connect the dots for me from don't sit on two legs of a chair to the reason you're still here.
When the Arizona blew up, we didn't know it at the time. 1,177 men died instantly aboard that ship. You ever been out to Pearl?
Sure.
You've been aboard the memorial?
Yes.
You've seen the onyx wall in the back with 1,177 names. But since then, there's been about, I would say, pretty close to 50 to 100 bodies put inside the ship.
Right.
So right after that explosion, I had my feet back up under Right by my feet is a hatch, just big enough for a person to crawl through from one side to the other. It's locked down with four steel dogs. It blew that hatch right off those four steel dogs, that explosion. My footrest was just torn right off. If my feet had been out where they would be, I would have no legs, and I probably wouldn't be alive.
You wouldn't have made it off the ship.
No. Nobody would have known we were there because there was only the two of us in that right gun. And went right past my legs, underneath the elevating screw, past Crozen's legs, and landed against the barbette, picking both of us up simultaneously and throwing us 8 feet back into the elevating screw. Now, I had the JA phones on, and when I picked myself up off the deck, Crozen says, "Stu, let's get out of here." So I said, "A good idea," only he didn't say it quite that nice. And in order to get out, you got to go up a ladder to the primer deck. And when I got to the primer deck, I reached the end of the cord. And I grabbed a hold of the belt, snapped it in half, and threw the whole thing down in the pit. I spent 20 years trying to stretch one of those belts. Couldn't do it. And it wasn't until after I retired that I understood how it was possible. And I show the kids the Inquirer magazine that I had. And it says a mother lifted a one-ton car up off her son. And I said, "That's an impossibility." But I read the article, then I understood. The adrenaline flows right through your body when you're in a state of excitement. So anyhow, we got on a topside. Our ship was on about a 15-degree list. Mm-hmm. And you can see the Tennessee is on one inboard of us. Now, a shell that hit the number two turret on the Tennessee killed my captain. Captain Banyan came out of his battle station, walked around the flying bridge over to the starboard side when a shell hit the edge of number two turret. And a piece of that shrapnel flew up and went through the lookout tower and tore my vice president's leg wide open. He got the Purple Heart. I never earned a Purple Heart for the whole war and the Korean War. And I told Crozen when we got out of topside, I says, "If I don't get killed today, I'll live to see the end of this war." "How can you say that, Stu?" I said, "If you've got the faith to believe it, you can do it."
He did it, and we'll hear how when we come back. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of these two amazing Pearl Harbor survivors you're hearing from today. I also have links to their complete original interviews there for you, as well as information on that PBS television special. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.